it's Native Heritage Month, and there's a play that lets heritage live on the stage. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. The must-read book for anyone who wants to understand Alaska is now a must-see play. Must-see for new reasons. Our number, toll-free, is 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@APRN.org. A winter bear is trouble, big trouble, on Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
Well, there are probably some who are listening to this show right now who are acquainted with Shadows on the Koyukuk, an Alaska Native's Life Along the River, written by Sidney Huntington with some help from Jim Reardon. It's a book that if you did read, you won't forget, and you try and get everybody else to read it. And I don't know about you, but I find that my friends don't always read what I recommend that they read. So some people felt so strongly about this book that they thought maybe it should be made into a play, and it has been. And it's on the stage. It started last Thursday at Cyrano's Theater Company in Anchorage. And so now we have it. Now we have this play, The Winter Bear. On the surface, it might appear to not really relate to the book, but if you read the book, you very quickly realize that it wouldn't exist without Sidney Huntington's book. Sidney Huntington is still alive. He's probably listening to the show right now, and but he needs a hearing aid. And he's a character in the play. He gave his consent to have this play done in the way that it is, and so it is that it shows up on the stage at Cyrano's during Native Heritage Month. And I think we'll start with the guy that plays Sidney here. It's Brian Westcott. Hello, Brian.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I'm just fine. You're nowhere near the age of the man you play.
No, actually, I figured it out. If my great-grandpa were still alive, he'd be about Sidney's age. Yeah. I didn't get to know him or my grandfather, but I did get to know my uncles. And this is a way for me to tip my hat to the old coots who made my life possible.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to do a little précis of the story and also the story of the play itself here. But essentially, this is a very, very interesting way of bringing to life the traditions that this man carries forth, and his own extraordinary family, and some of the things that happen. And I mean, even if they didn't happen, they have this immense mythological bent to them, and all that shows up in the play. That's pretty vague. I want to talk to the playwright here at this point. I think if we got her, Ann Hanley in Fairbanks. Are you with us?
I am certainly with you. Good morning, Steve.
Well, good morning. How are you today?
Great.
So, you know, if you could tell me a little bit about the genesis of this. As I understand it, there were some people that got enthusiastic about Sidney's book, and they came up with the idea of doing a plot that was really related to Native youth suicide and then turning that back into portraying the book. And somewhere you came along and said, oh, this is mine, I'll do this, and went and spent all the time with Sidney Huntington to actually render this thing out to something that could be played on the stage.
Well, I think, first of all, I need to say that the play is not based on the book. I wouldn't want people to come to the show and think they were going to see the book. The play is fiction. I certainly read the book, and that was one thing that led me to get involved in the project, because when I heard that this group was interested in doing something on the life of Sidney Huntington, I just jumped at the chance to participate because, like you, his book is one that I read when I first came to Alaska and that I've been recommending to people who want the real story of what it was really like here. However, I did take a great departure from the book in deciding to make it a work of fiction that would not be based on Sidney's life, but would be based on a fictional situation between Sidney and a young boy. Now, Sidney, in his real life, has mentored many young people. So although the situation is fiction, I'd like to think it's truer to kind of a higher truth that Sidney has indeed mentored many young people. So that's just a little clarification. The play is actually based on my conversations with Sidney and not on the book.
Ah, very good. And you spent a good deal of time up there in Galena, as I understand.
Well, I have spent some time. Of course, I would always like to spend more time up there. Mm-hmm. I have friends at the Galena Interior Learning Academy there, so every chance I can go up and see the kids there and do some writing work with them and incidentally see Sidney is just wonderful. So I have had a chance to spend some time with him and his family, various members of his family. I think Sidney had 20 children, and I think I counted maybe 12 or 13 of them. So that's also added greatly to the experience.
Well, yeah, we have Brian here. You probably heard him before we brought you on. And,
yes.
And of course, he's the one that plays Sidney. And essentially, in the plot then, if we can just do a little précis of it, maybe we have a situation where Sidney is an old man. He's gone out to the cabin in the woods, and he's going to try and record or write down his stories. And he's got a granddaughter who's coming out and making sure he's doing okay. But he has, I guess you would say, kind of writer's block. Wouldn't you say that, Brian?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what is it? There's actually a line in there. I don't know if this is really from him or not. He says, takes all the juice out of it, something like that.
And once you put the words down on paper, it drains all the juice out of them.
Is that right from Sidney?
Well, no, that's right from the writer. But
way to go.
It's certainly something that I think Sidney agrees with.
Yeah, and so he gets in a situation where the tribal court essentially has proposed an alternative sentence for a kid who was caught with a bunch of flammable liquid at the school and accused of trying to burn it down. And then as the plot develops, through a very interesting device of Sidney turning off his hearing aid, and the boy tells his story whenever Sidney's hearing aid is off. And so the audience, you've introduced the Shakespearean element right away there, where the audience knows stuff the characters don't know.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, it's the drama begins. This young man is brought through the mentorship and conditions and circumstances to have to deal with this bear, this winter bear that has shown up and deal with a major crisis in a very, very traditional sort of way. I guess that's essentially the plot. But it's so bold and audacious the way you have, the way this has been brought to the stage. I guess Jane Wenger, the director, had probably a lot to do with making this be alive.
Well, she certainly did. We have animals in the play, and they come from the time when animals and people had a lot more conversation together. And the animals speak to Sidney, they speak to each other, and in the end, they interact with the boy. And Jane favored having the animals on the stage the whole time, which I think adds greatly because you can kind of see the animals' animal reactions to some of the action that's taking place. And I think that was a great touch of Jane's to do that.
Yes, but of course then you end up with pretty big cast.
Yes.
And you also have to have skilled enough actors to who are going to be able to execute that. I mean, not all that easy.
We do, and find marvelous actors who were able to do that and really get into the animals. I mean, each one of the animal characters really. And I know Wolverine went to the zoo and spent some time with the Wolverine at the zoo, you know, which I call one-on-one research.
Yeah.
So, we're getting
some cutting out on your line there. We're going to try and reestablish. We're going to call you back. If you could just hang up and we'll call you. We'll have our engineer will call you back.
Okay.
And I'll carry on with Brienne here. So here you are trying to play this old man.
Well, I'll tell you, I did some homework too. That was unscheduled and unplanned. I ended up in the ER and the hospital during the rehearsal process of this play with what turned out to be very bad gallbladder illness, but it was not diagnosed properly. So I was watching a lot of the old guys in the hospital and how they walked and everything. And it was actually a great, great opportunity for me to, okay. And with what happened to my abdomen and the surgery eventually, I walked like Sydney because you can't stride when you've had this done to you.
Yeah.
So that was all. You have to take advantage of whatever life throws at you and learn from it and use it.
Yeah. One thing that you quickly realize if you've ever met with or dealt with Sydney is that he's a tradition bearer, but he's also a modern.
Yes.
He's modern. He's not no stranger to a snow machine or any of the modern stuff. And anybody who has done all the amount of trapping that he's done knows a thing or two.
Right.
So you had to play this kind of blend, you know, because Sydney, sure, he has his native heritage, but he also has his gold miner heritage.
Absolutely. And in fact, Anne let me work in a little bit of the phrasing from it was technically my great uncle, but he and my great aunt raised my mother, a very traditional kind of thing. And he's just an old trapper, miner guy from McGrath and pert near this and that. And that, that's him. This is a way for me to really tip my hat because even though that great uncle is Gusuk, that way of life is, you know, dimming. And the way those people talk and how they lived and survived. And this is a way for me to pay tribute to Don Harris from McGrath, Alaska.
All right. Way to go. And so tell me a little bit about your own people. I mean, you're an actor. You're part Irish. You're part Athabascan. And you're part Yupik.
My people, my native people are from a border area on the Kuskokwim, right between Athabascan and Yupik. And actually, our family's first language is Yupik, which is kind of odd, but I just grew up understanding that life is strange.
Yeah,
you don't know what you're gonna get.
And as an actor, you have you know, obviously professionally, you get to a certain level, you're just gonna have to leave town because you're not gonna get the gigs in Alaska.
Right.
So you go to whatever, Los Angeles, or you've been around actually.
Yeah, I studied on the East Coast, and then Los Angeles is pretty much where you have to go. And that's also the home of Native Voices at the Archie, which is the premier Native theater company in the country. And in fact, the producing director of that company is in town right now doing a festival of new plays at Cyrano's. So it's hard living in the city. I don't like the traffic and a lot of the kinds of people that are there, but it is wonderful to be able to do this kind of work. And I tell people, hey, I grew up in an A-frame cabin without running water on Esther Dome outside of Fairbanks. If I could get my way in to do this kind of stuff, anybody can. Anybody listening here could, if you really want to do this kind of work, you can do it.
Well, now here you are back in Alaska. You get this really nice, juicy part. You get to work with a director who's respected in the industry. It's not so bad. And plus, it must be interesting to you that this is really about Native themes.
It is. Initially there was a little bit of hand-wringing that, oh my God, you know, we can't get any of the Native directors here because there's two or three, literally, and schedules just didn't permit it. But I thought, God, working with Jane Wenger, what a plus that is, just for me as a professional actor to kick this into a next level. And it's very inspiring to have that, where people really do come together and collaborate on something that none of us could do individually. The business, the performing arts really work best when people are truly collaborating.
Yeah. So let's see. Ann Hanley, are you back with us?
Back. I'm back on my cell phone.
Okay, well, hopefully this one will work a little better. Not sure what was going on. It was maybe that radio phone or something. Anyway, it's immaterial. So the genesis of this play was some years. It didn't just happen overnight, right?
No, really, the genesis was in 2007 when a group of young men in Fairbanks got together after a suicide event in Fort Yukon and decided that they wanted to do something positive that would provide alternatives for youth. So they began holding dances that were drug and alcohol free and working with kids in various capacities. And then one of the young men, Mark Frank, came up with the idea, well, let's do a play. And he'd been reading Sydney's book and thought that would make a good play because Sydney Huntington had many adversities that he had to overcome.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it started. And then they got a grant from First Alaskans, and it was given to Danakanaga here in Fairbanks. That's an organization of youth and elders. And we performed it with students from F.E. Cochran Charter School, which is an Athabascan-focused charter school, and it's for junior high and high school students. So our first production was with those students, and that was quite amazing because a number of them were related to Sydney Huntington. So they were young, but they were the right people to be doing the play, and they did a fabulous job on it.
Now, in the plot, I think it's almost a classic. It must be at a certain point it almost writes itself. I mean, not in terms of how am I going to unfold or dramatize this, but the essence of a young man discovering strength in himself through the agency of outside stuff plus a mentor who's very sure of himself. That's just how many that's everywhere. That is the story, you might say. But this underlying issue of Native youth suicide would appear to be related to this. I don't know what to call it, but self-esteem is not the best word for it. It's more a matter of just feeling you're completely worthless, and it's time for it to be over with.
Yes, well, the more I looked at the material, the key for me was finding a way into the material because there was Sydney Huntington and his life and, people know him and respect him, and I needed a way into it. And I got my way in when I thought about a story about a contemporary youth. And after that, I wouldn't say it wrote itself, but the more I worked with the material, the more I thought, wow, this is really a classic hero myth that I'm looking at here. And when you look at the hero myth stories that are out there now, they're very trite compared to the reality of this kind of a story. The fact that in the old days, young men had to stand in front of a charging bear with nothing but a very thin, flexible, willowy stick with a piece of bone, sharpened piece of bone on the end. To me, that's a real hero. And, so many of the hero myths that we're given now are just sort of action-adventure stories about kind of comic book characters doing outlandish things on different planets. And to me, this is a hero myth that's taking place right on our own planet.
And then to underscore that in the drama, the way that you introduce your Sydney character, and this is what's the boy's name again? Shadow.
His name is Dwayne Shadow.
Dwayne.
David. Shadow's nickname.
Yeah.
Call him Dwayne.
Dwayne. he's like when we meet him, he's totally absorbed in some kind of a video game deal that he's playing on his little Game Boy. And he's in that hero mode. He's trying to make himself a hero through this, wouldn't you say?
Well, he starts off in the typical hero mode in the sense that he doesn't know he's been chosen. He doesn't know there's anything special about him. In fact, he feels that he's very, he wants to stay in the shadows. He doesn't want to be known. And it seems that that is the way most dramas like this start out, that it's a person who doesn't know that they've been given a special task. And it's him rising to assume the task. I think that the important thing that I wanted to get across was that the boy has been brought up in foster homes. He doesn't know much about his culture. All he knows is video games. But in a sense, the whole vocabulary of video games is a vocabulary of questing, hunting, seeking, using various grades of weapons. So in a sense, although the boy and Sydney don't appear to have much in common at first, they both have kind of a hunting vocabulary. Sydney's is of the old-time hunting methods, and the boy is of video games. So in that way, they're able to form a bond and a rapport together.
I didn't have any trouble making that stretch when Sydney says, okay, we're going to make a spear. It seemed perfectly natural to me. You guys pulled that one off.
Oh, good. I want to point out that, for example, this collision between this, you know, this little snotty kid and his Game Boy and this old dude gives some great opportunity for humor. Like the kid explaining.
Thank heavens.
Yes. The humor in a play about suicide. That's not an easy thing to pull off. And so this kid explaining this wasteland, this game that he's playing to this old coot is really pretty priceless.
I agree. Now, you take the play. The play is brought up through the process we've discussed and involves the elements that we've discussed. And now it's getting performed. It got performed with kids. And now with this cast of professional actors, Irene Bedard appears in this. Irene is back. I don't know. Is she off the hook with her Disney contract now? Like, I've been wondering about that. Anyway, she's back.
I don't know. We're just so grateful that she's here and that she's participating. It's just wonderful to have her.
Yeah.
We did a tour to Galena, which is the home of Sydney Huntington.
Well, that's exactly where I was going with this, because it's in the program. You almost didn't do it in Galena. You know, you went to Galena to do it, and there had been a suicide.
Yes, just a day and a half before we got there, we got the word that a young 21-year-old man had committed suicide, and we just didn't know what to do at that point. In a sense, everything, the train was rolling. We were all packed. We were ready to go, but we didn't know if we should go. And the people in Galena said, well, we don't know what's going to happen either, but we think you should come ahead. So we did. And where I was going to mention with Irene was that the first night we were there, they had a potlatch for us, which was really thrilling to have Sydney Huntington do a speech and welcome us. And he also presented signed copies of his book to the cast, and it was just really wonderful. And afterwards, we spoke to kids at the boarding school there. And Irene they were so happy to make the connection with Irene, because they all had grown up with Pocahontas. I mean, she was maybe the first Native American role model for a lot of those girls. So to have Pocahontas in the flesh suffering with them and you know, relating her experiences. And so many of these kids have had suicide be much too close to them. And so when something happens like this, it brings up all the hard feelings and all the worry and the fear again for them. So having people like Irene and the rest of the cast just to do the play and then to talk about the issues was truly an amazing experience for all of us.
And then, as it turned out, everybody had to see it, so you had to do it again.
We did. You know, we didn't know if anybody would feel like coming to a play, and we had many of the kids from the school come. We had many, many people from the town. It was an amazing audience because there were very elderly people. Sidney Huntington and his wife Angela were in the front row. A number of their children in the Galena area were there. We also had the students. And it was funny because the students got all the video game jokes. The elders got, you know, different jokes. All of them had an appreciation for the material that, you know, our Anchorage audiences are great, but I don't think they get it quite the same way that the Galena audience got it. There were lots of kind of little sighs in Galena. We have one line in the play when the boy, Sidney, kind of describes how well the boy has done with his hunt, and the boy says, "Well, what do you mean? I just went out for a little walk." And Sidney says, "Now you're talking like a real Koyukon hunter." And it was just a sigh in Galena, like, oh, you know. So that was very, very thrilling for me.
So you feel pretty good about it, your work with this play, The Winter Bear?
Well, I have to say I do feel good about it. I feel we've had many people, especially people in Galena and when we did the show in Fairbanks, that came up to us and said, "Will you come to our village? You know, I live in Huslia. I live in Mountain Village, and, you know, we'd love you to come up there." So that made me and the cast and everyone involved very interested in getting out there and getting the funding we need to get this play around to the places where it should be seen by the people that should see it. We're very excited that it looks like a week from Sunday we're going to be able to do at least a shortened version at McLaughlin Youth Center in Anchorage. So we're really excited about that.
Yeah. And Brian?
To follow on what you're saying, Anne, we've taken to calling it now the Winter Bear Project because we want it to be an ongoing project that's larger than any of us individuals involved. It's larger than this little run we're having at Cyrano's right now, as great as that is. We want it to keep going. We want to get the message out. We want to get more people engaged, both in performing it and seeing it, and people taking ownership in it, because there's so much goodness that comes from that.
And taking it to Valdez, too, yes?
Yes, that's right. To the last Frontier Theater Conference, we've been invited to perform next summer there, which is a fantastic opportunity.
Yeah. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about Native Heritage Month and the play, The Winter Bear, which it was some years in the making and just had its premier performance in Anchorage and is showing now. We got one of the actors and we got the playwright. But there's so many other people, really, that work into this thing. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Fire Island Wind, offering a fuel-free energy alternative to South Central Alaska natural gas. Learn more at fireislandwind.com.
ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, has been asked to administer the new temporary federal insurance program that allows individuals with a qualifying pre-existing condition and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months an opportunity to purchase health insurance. Capacity is limited, so contact an insurance broker or ACHEA immediately. More information at ACHIA.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
We're talking with Anne Hanley, former Alaska writer laureate and the playwright of The Winter Bear. A very, very interesting play. And Anne, I'm going to tell you what the thing that hit me the hardest about this play was that this does what people are always talking about doing. Anthropologists often don't get it, which is that the stories don't live on unless they live. You know, you gave Sidney Huntington the line, you know, it takes all the juice out of it. But, you know, this put the juice back in.
Oh, that's good.
Congratulations.
Well, you know, that's something that I've lived here almost 35 years, and I feel that I'm just learning the depths of the Athabascan culture. And I was very moved by the autobiography of Chief Peter John, and he spoke a lot about oral history. And it made me realize just how powerful an oral story is. Really, a written story is just a mere shell of an oral story. And an oral story can be tailored to the person to whom it's being told, and tailored to the needs of that person. And that's what Sidney Huntington is trying to do with Duane. He's trying to tell him the stories he needs to hear in the order he needs to hear them in. So yes, that's a big part of the story.
And then beyond that, as it's acted out on the stage, and there really are, you know, genuine stories right out of Sidney's book, which are, you know, put forth on the stage, then it also lives on in all the audience, where they all start telling one another about it. And they, you know, so it's once again, it's alive, as opposed to just something written down in a book somewhere.
Right.
That's exactly right. A performance actually establishes a relationship between people who are performing and their audience, and that's reinforcing social bonds. It's reinforcing all the web of life that keeps people together, and it's so important now with so much alienation and so many lost people that those of us who are in a position to be able to try to restore some of that, this is a great privilege and a responsibility to sort of bring back some of that oral relationship between people.
Somebody said to me, well, you know, gee, it would be really expensive to bring this whole cast and crew to villages in Alaska. Why don't you just make a DVD of the show and just send it out there? And, you know, that's exactly the point we're making with this, that when we went out to Galena, we had an experience with those people. And I know it changed all of us. And the thing that changed us was the sharing with them after the show was over, when they shared some of their experiences with suicide and what they were going through. And, you know, some of the cast members did also. And so it was that kind of live person-to-person sharing that made a real experience.
Yeah. We're getting a little zippy little electronic artifact in your cell phone. Fascinating. Sidney Huntington lost three sons, right, to suicide?
Yes.
So this was pretty important to him then.
Well, what happened was I did the first show, and I didn't really get to see Sidney until I'd kind of done a draft, just because of when things were due, and then Sidney wasn't feeling well. And so I got out to see him a little late in the process. And when we were speaking, he kind of opened up to me about these three sons. And when he did, he was so affected. I mean, he cried. And to see this 95-year-old man so affected by events that happened really quite a long time ago. And you know, he said to me, he said, every day I think about them. And that's when I knew that I had a real responsibility to go deeper with the play and to dig into this issue, because of what Sidney told me, because he was willing enough to share this with me. And then, you know, when I kept writing and I did a draft, and he looked at it, and, you know, I said, this is very personal material. You know, what do you think about this? And he said, well, if you think it will help one kid, then I'm all for it. I mean, this man is so generous. And I have to say his family is generous to let him expose some of these painful parts of his life. That I just feel a great responsibility and an honor that he would give me this confidence and a real responsibility to do something meaningful with it. So that's what we're trying to do.
Well, I have to say is, you know, when I met you and the two other women involved in really creating this, I had this feeling of, oh, this could be really bad. Give me a break. It's three white ladies doing Alaska Natives. Give me a break. You know, what are the chances? I gotta admit, the chances were pretty damn good. I don't know how you did it. But well, it seems that the key was permission, respect, and somehow getting beyond whatever political correctitude or anything to the point where everybody's on mission. They're just plain on mission.
Well, they're, you know, you might have seen three ladies, and they're the tip of the iceberg, but there are lots of people behind those three ladies. Matt Stevens and Mark Frank, who had the original idea to do a play. They're all the people at First Alaskans, Dinakanaga. So many of Sydney's children who really came forward. Betty Huntington, Annie Huntington Kriska, who helped write grants for us. Tom Huntington, who lent us his dad's parka for the show. And having that parka, I think, really just meant so much to the cast early on in the rehearsal to know that they had this object, which is a just an incredibly beautiful piece made by Sydney's wife, Angela, that came directly from Sydney. That was just so important. So all the way along the line, there have been people who've given of themselves, their energy, their expertise. So, you know, when we say the Winter Bear Project, we really mean hundreds of people who've just done so much for us.
Yeah, yeah. Your project is probably not a bad word for it at all.
I'm going to add.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to add, just from the actor's perspective, to have someone of the stature of Sydney Huntington be so candid about the difficulties he's had in his own life, and he feels some real responsibility for what happened to his three sons, to have him give permission to me and the rest of the cast to look at him in this whole situation as these are real human beings, that was very liberating. Because if we had to pussyfoot around him as just this revered elder, which he is, he wouldn't be come to life in the 3D way that he does as a real human being who's been there, he's been to the brink himself and come back. And that it imbued our process with, it made it much richer for us and also drove that responsibility that Anne's talking about. I mean, we all really get it. Sydney has gone out to the edge of everything to try to get this message out. Well, the least we can do is help.
And then there's the matter of the animals. There's a matter of the wolverine, who's a really important animal as far as Sydney's concerned. The way that the play works is that the animals are only present when Sydney's by himself, for the most part. And so here's this wolverine, and we get maybe you can just tell me why the wolverine is important to a trapper, to this trapper.
Well, and maybe, Anne, you could, I don't know if there's any correlation with Sydney's actual life, but in the play, when Sydney was just 12 years old, I believe this did actually happen, he caught a wolverine in his trap, but it was 78 below zero, and it was only carrying the body of this Wolverine back that kept him warm enough to live. And that so that became his doyen. He also has a very special relationship and a deep, deep reverence for bears based on something that happened when he was five.
He won't even say their names.
Correct. It's Big Animal. And there's one of the many monologues in the play is about his frustration that he can't even say that word.
I find myself not daring to say it either.
Yogi, Big Animal. Yeah. Yeah, when he was 5 years old, his brother was three, his sister was one and a half. The mom had them up on the Hog River. Dad had gone down on a skiff to get a couple of the other children. Their mother died. And there they were. He was the oldest, 5 years old. And he realized that they were going to have to leave her. And a big one literally picked up his baby sister by the diaper. And Sydney begged her to put his sister down, and she did.
See, now we're in the area of our Alaska mythology. That's why I tell people they have to read this book. And you've acted it out on the stage. But these are our stories. They belong to us.
Yes, they do.
As Alaskans.
Of all kinds. Yes. Another thing I want to commend Sydney about, he's not shy about the fact that he's not full-blooded. He doesn't speak his language. Life is a mixture of all kinds of things. And he's not shy about it. Here I am. Here it is.
Yeah.
It's complicated. Get over it.
It is complicated. The whole thing is real complicated. Our telephone number here is 1-800-478-8255. Perhaps you're in Galena. Perhaps you've seen this play and would like to share how it affected you. I've kind of put out there what it did to me. I'm not even sure it's good theater, but I sure know I went through something that night. It's very hard work for, I imagine you guys really had to put an awful lot into bringing this thing alive to make it all happen so smoothly. I'm still not understanding. I mean, in one sense, Anne, you kind of did it. Technically, you sort of helped it along because it's almost all, except for the one part of it, which sort of takes place in the dream time, I guess you could say. But it's a real plot element of the play. But it's kind of done, presented sort of virtually the way that it's staged. Everything takes place in the same little cabin. So you've made it fairly. The production is somewhat simplified.
Yes and no. Our production designer did a brilliant job of making furniture for inside this cabin that also just melts. It's a little bit like Where the Wild Things Are when the bedroom becomes a forest.
Yeah.
It's birch, like legs of these chairs, but the seats are plexiglass and they just sort of disappear. So it goes inside outside kind of seamlessly. That was the idea.
Yeah, and then the animals also, they kind of disappear.
Yes, they come in and out.
They're still there, but they're not there.
Right. Those are some superb actors playing those characters. They really kick this thing into another realm.
Yeah. So, Anne Hanley, you feel happy about the result?
Oh, extremely happy. And I go to every show, and I learn something at every show. You know, audience response is different. Sometimes the actors would say a line a certain way, and other times they don't. So there's always something new to learn, which is really exciting.
Yeah. This is kind of an interesting comment we got from Cynthia, who said... At the Senate Candidate Forum, sponsored by the Native Professional Association, the suicide issue directly followed the subsistence issue, yet no one connected the two. Certainly, there is no direct connection in terms of the individuals who took their own lives, yet many years ago, I learned from an Alaska sociologist who happens to be Yupik and from the same rural area where the highest number of suicides are occurring, that self-respect within a culture is related to the respect outsiders give that culture. That's a pretty powerful statement. Suicide is related to a lack of self-respect. Subsistence is part of rural Alaska Native cultures. I wonder what your thoughts on that. That seems pretty...
Well, I think that part of the first mission of the play is to raise awareness among Alaska Native, especially males, young males, that they have the potential to be heroes. The second is to change the climate of awareness of the society as a whole, so that maybe, you know, after you see the play and maybe you see a Native kid hanging around on the corner, maybe you say, oh, he's about Dwayne's age, you know, instead of saying or thinking something negative, like, why is he hanging around or something like that.
Huh.
So that's part of the reason. I think that as far as the connection between subsistence and suicide, the play, I think, is not about suicide, because to me, suicide is the end of a long chain of events. And it tries to look at the causes of suicide rather than the end result. And part of the cause is the disintegration of a traditional way of life, where everything made sense and where actions had a purpose towards an end. And when you change that and substitute something else, then there's a great just a gap. And I think that's part of what Dwayne is feeling, is that gap.
Yeah, and the way you work it in the plot, which is not all that unrealistic, sadly, is that the reason he's there with the flammables in the school is because he's looking to go huffing.
he's burn himself up.
Yeah.
Anne is not, she does not hold back in what a lot of kids are going through and the things that they think about and the things that they do and the words they use to describe all that. It's all there.
Well, we'll get a shout out here from the email when we come back as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Condor Airlines, offering nonstop service to Frankfurt from Anchorage and Fairbanks between May and September, with connections to most German and European destinations. Details available at condor.com. Elks National Foundation, in conjunction with the Alaska State Elks Association and local lodges, is offering the Most Valuable Student MVS Scholarship for high school seniors. These scholarships are awarded to graduating high school seniors through a local, state, and national competition and are based on scholarship, leadership, and financial need. Information and applications available at elks.org/ENF. Application deadline is December 1st, 2010. This message sponsored by the Alaska Elks Association.
This one comes from Milton, who is on the web and listening in San Francisco. Hi, Ann and Brian. I'm listening to you in San Francisco while Jane is in rehearsal for a jazz performance piece she's directing. Originally, we were going to have Jane Winger on here, but as you can see, she had to go to rehearsal. I want to tell you that, for me, it's been a thrill to be involved with The Winter Bear. The trip to Fairbanks and Galena was an overwhelming experience. I will always remember the warm embrace of the folks in Galena and the powerful positive response at the AFN. I want to mention the special help of Carrie Pavish Anderson and Nate Kafka in Galena and Carrie Seward in Fairbanks. With their help and heart, those shows were possible. I am sad that I could not see the final staging at Cyrano's, where the staging has been fully realized. Best of luck for the run at Cyrano's, and I hope with all my heart that this show is able to travel to villages where the message of this play should be heard. That's interesting, you know, that you want to make a project out of this, because it's going to be an expensive one.
Yep, but I feel that for every step of the way, when we needed help, it was there for us. And I think that it will be again. So I'm really not worried about it.
Well, you know, what it sort of reminds me of is what happens the healing force that's involved when a victim of sexual abuse or even just physical abuse comes forward. There's a healing for that person, but also because they're willing to go ahead and put their face on it, it somehow makes it far more healing for everybody.
Yes, and Sidney Huntington was generous enough to step forward and do that. And, you know, I'm so grateful to him. And it's just a continuation of what he's done all his life, which is try to interact with young people and help them. Even today, in 95, he still goes to the early basketball practice at Sidney Huntington School and just hangs out, you know, just sits there. I know when we came to Galena, he was there at the little cabin, flying service cabin, to meet us. He spoke at the potlatch. He came to the play. You know, every step of the way, he let us know that we were important to him and that he supported us. And that's what he's done for young people all along. And, you know, that's what we all need to do. So, you know, he continues to show us through his example what we should do. And it's simple. It's just be out there, be involved, be focused, be interested. That's what it takes.
Let's go to Caroline Jones, program from Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Caroline.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I wanted to say that I really am interested in this show. I think it's just perfect. But a resident at Homer, whose name is Michael Klein, he and Dottie, his wife, live here, has written a book that's written for juveniles. It's called Bear Hunter. It's a self-published book, but it takes place in Hooslea. And his storyteller is Jimmy Huntington.
Ah, and it's the same story you're talking here, yeah.
Yeah, it's a wonderful book written for young people. So if the people who go to Cyrano's and love that play and have young people, perhaps this book is written for, I'm a teacher, so about 10 to 15-year-old or maybe 10 to 14-year-old would really enjoy this book. But it takes place in the 1960s, and it's about a boy who goes out on his first bear hunt. It follows him through this. He's learning a traditional village ways that talks about mushing, dogs, beaver trapping, and other Athabascan Indian activities. And in the end, there's something that happens on the ice where he has to really depend upon his, he and a friend have to depend on each other, and they learn survival lessons. It's a really wonderful book. And I was going to suggest it for the Battle of the Books because I know a lot of villages participate in that. But also I think a lot of elders don't know what to tell their children, and this is a book they could read, and it's a dialogue. They could use it as a place for a diving board for dialogue.
And it's Bear Hunters by who?
Bear Hunter by Michael S. Klein, spelled C-L-I-N-E.
Okay.
It's a self-published book, and it comes out of Glen Aaron Press, and he lives in Homer. And I would love to see this play come to Homer. I think the villages, Port Graham, Nanwalk, and Tyonek, we have several villages around in Homer that would probably love this play, and Homer High has a wonderful stage, so I hope they'll think about Homer.
You betcha.
Sure.
And thank you. And I just come to Homer.
Great. Well, thank you. We'll put you on our list.
Wonderful.
And thank you for letting us know.
It's a wonderful book.
Yeah, thank you for letting us know about that.
All right. Yes, maybe we ought to just tell the bear tale. I mean, essentially this happened really to Jimmy, right? With the bear and the spear?
Well, I'm not sure it happened to Jimmy, but it happened to someone that told the story to Sidney.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and there it is.
You mean the story of taking the bear with a spear?
Yeah, yeah. And the bear in the hole, that's definitely in Sidney's book.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of hard to imagine.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's bravery, I think, to have to stand in front of a bear with so little.
And I guess at the risk of slightly giving away a turn at the end of the play, the boy realizes that the reason nobody bragged about that kind of feat is that if you approach a big animal with the proper respect and you ask it to help you, they do the work. They put their heart on the spear. It's not you. And so that teaches the humility that you need to have to be able to actually survive. So that's a big turning point for the Duane character in the show.
Well, I don't know where this thing will go next, but I want to congratulate you for taking it as far as you have. Anne Hanley, great job.
Thank you. Well, I hope that we will continue, and I think with the energy we have, that will definitely happen.
And I'm thinking about Raven, the character Raven in here, who definitely made the world. but he gets to make wisecracks throughout the whole thing.
Right.
Oh, and tricks everybody. The actor tricked himself yesterday. He couldn't find his gloves. It was very funny.
So where in the world did you find these, the people that play the animals? They're all just terrific.
Well, this is all Alaska talent. I had known Eric Hayden's work for a number of years because I see him in the Valdez Theater Conference. Also, Eric Robertson, who plays the wolf, I've seen in Valdez. So the Valdez Theater Conference is a real kind of incubator for theater actors, playwrights, for everyone that loves theater in Alaska. So
the casting then was done by Jane, pretty much?
Well, it was kind of interesting. We did the casting by Skype. We had auditions in Anchorage, and I was in Fairbanks, and Jane was in San Francisco. And, our Skype, when you do it with two cameras, is pretty slow. So, we'd sort of see somebody, and then they'd freeze. And then, they'd few more seconds, and then it would start to move again. And it wasn't ideal, but, we had a limited budget, and so we weren't able to all be there for the auditions. But, we got a pretty good look at people, I think, via the Skype.
That is absolutely amazing. I never heard of that use of Skype. Well, I had that. And what a budget savings.
Yeah.
Well, not just a budget savings. It's actually allowing something like this that, as far-flung as it was, for us to be able to pull the elements together and make it work.
So Sue and Rango quickly said, do you have this on DVD yet? Are you gonna?
No, we will work on it, and that's something for the future. I'm hoping that we can do a screenplay in the future and work
that. All right, I want to thank you. We're out of time. Brian Westcott, thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Anne Hanley, thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Talk of Alaska, thanks to Pat Yak, B.D. Trantina, and Dave Waldron. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by
Fire Island Wind, offering a renewable energy alternative to natural gas for South Central Alaska. Information at fireislandwind.com.
The Federal Aviation Administration sets rules for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, and when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704. This message is sponsored by the FAA. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.